welcome to the Practical Cardiology Podcast. I'm Patrick Campbell, Senior Editor of PracticalCardiology.com, and in this episode, you'll hear from Dr. Deepak Bhatt. Dr. Bhatt, who is the Executive Director of Interventional Cardiovascular Programs at Brigham and Women's Hospital, is the lead author on a recent article published in the Journal of the American Heart Association examining the impact of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic on clinical trials. A leading trialist, Dr. Bhatt offers perspective on data and from personal experience on how the pandemic has, is, and will continue to affect clinical trials, with the ripple effect ranging from disruptions in treatment pipelines to the real-world treatment of patients. Without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Bhatt. All right, thank you for that. Now, transitioning a bit to the study that you were an author on about the landscape of cardiovascular clinical trials during the COVID-19 era. I think this is a really sort of huge topic to tackle. You might be the best to do it in cardiovascular space. What exactly was the purpose of this article that you guys published? And what do you think are the most relevant findings for clinicians to consider?
Sure. Well, it's an important topic. I'm really glad you asked about it. The effects of COVID are just immense in all aspects of life, personal life, professional life, societal level, hospitals. There's just healthcare workers. It's just really hard to summarize in a few minutes how profound the effects have been. It's really a crisis that is involving people of all walks of life, of all ages, of all regions of the world. So really nothing like it in most of our lifetimes. What we were focusing on here, and there have been some related publications as well, is this effect of COVID-19 on clinical research. Of course, there's been an effect on COVID-19 related research. There's a lot of that going on, and hopefully some really valuable insights that will come out of the observational and randomized data sets that are being accrued with respect to COVID-19 diagnosis, treatment, etc. But what we were focusing on was really the effect of COVID-19 on cardiovascular trials, and the fact that that's not a pretty story to tell. That is, there have been a number of casualties already in terms of ongoing cardiovascular outcome trials that have been suspended or just completely stopped for a variety of COVID-19 related reasons. So that's an unfortunate consequence of COVID-19 that it's going to have, that it's already had, I should say, an enormous impact on ongoing trials. Also on trials that were about to be launched, a number of which have been delayed. I'm involved with several. So this really has had an impact on cardiovascular trials that I don't think we'll fully appreciate for a few years, but I must say, at least in the trialist community, with collaboration with regulatory agencies such as the US FDA, the European Medicines Agency, a variety of other organizations, the ACC, for example, the American College of Cardiology is trying to also step in and help here. There are efforts underway to try to figure out how can we salvage the most data possible. Of course, it's a very generous thing for a person to contribute their time, to volunteer their time, to be a participant in a clinical trial, and we don't want that valuable contribution to be wasted, even in the context of a pandemic where data quality may suffer, ascertainment of endpoints may be incomplete, follow-up may not be as good as we'd like, in-person follow-up may be impossible. So there's a lot of adaptation that will need to go on, but I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to salvage data from all of this, but there will be some casualties of trials that just won't be completed, that can't be completed, that'll be underpowered. And I think as we're evaluating all these different studies, we've got to be a little bit reasonable and realize that in these cases, it wasn't the investigator's fault, it certainly wasn't the patient's fault, wasn't the system's fault, it's a pandemic. It's almost like a wartime situation where you just got to do what you've got to do. And as a consequence, we'll have to evaluate research that was occurring in this time with a little bit, I believe, of a sympathetic lens. And I think there are ways to still do that appropriately and rigorously and preserve the scientific integrity of those studies. But some that just were stopped, there may not be all with salvageable data or information if they were stopped very early. And other ones that didn't get to launch, those casualties, we may not even know all of those particular trials. So lots of consequences here, but the medical community, the trialist community is doing what we can to adapt. And hopefully as we move forward with what appears to be an ongoing pandemic with frequent, I believe, surges that will keep occurring for at least a while, albeit maybe at different times in different places of the country and world, we just have to adapt to this new normal and not let what has been a very successful cardiovascular research enterprise completely collapse, which there was some risk of happening, but I think things have at least pseudo-stabilized. I'm aware of a number of trials that are trying to get started up again. And again, I'm cautiously optimistic that this will be successful, but it's going to take a lot of effort for sure.
All right, now just sort of staying on that topic, for the studies that did not get suspended or that continued to sort of push forward during this time, are you or any other trialists concerned that some clinicians might take the information that comes with them sort of with a grain of salt when they are released? Because we've seen so many different trends throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's really, a lot of people think it'll be months or even years before we fully understand the impact that the disease has had on patients.
Very difficult question. I don't know. I hope that the quality of data we're obtaining will still be good. It's difficult to know what the impact of COVID would be. I was talking about the impact so far just on the clinical trial machinery, but on actual outcomes, there could be an effect. So if one were looking at a drug, for example, and the effect on myocardial infarction, if there are a bunch of patients that are COVID positive or regions where there's a lot of COVID, that might make it harder to interpret. It might be harder to find a treatment effect if there's a bunch of positive troponins from COVID, as we know occurs in about 20% of COVID positive inpatients. So, you know, there's going to be a lot more type 2 MIs, which may, depending on the drug, be less likely to be influenced by the drug as opposed to, say, a type 1 spontaneous MI. So it's just really difficult to know what the impact will be. Revascularization as an endpoint could be affected just because even if a patient wants or needs revascularization, they might not be able to go to the hospital, or they may feel like they can't go to the hospital and therefore delay that revascularization or completely just not have it. So there's all sorts of effects on endpoints that might not be so obvious now, may not be so easy to ascertain. The good news is, at least for trials that are really large, that have diverse geographies, that are randomized with placebo controls, you know, some of these different factors I just mentioned will hopefully sort themselves out, but not necessarily. So I guess we'll have to see what the actual impact will be. But again, this isn't happening in a vacuum. There's, you know, smart folks thinking about these issues, not just academicians, but people in industry, people in regulatory agencies, people in professional societies. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to try to salvage the cardiovascular research enterprise. And it's not just cardiovascular research. That's what I'm more familiar with, but it's also issues in other areas of research. You know, the oncologists have been wondering about how they're going to continue research if they're in a place where there is a surge that's ongoing. So really, it's many different types of research.
Okay, and then just one last question for you, transitioning to the studies that have been stopped or suspended. What does that do to the sort of developmental pipelines for these drugs, and how can this have a real impact on patients down the road? If we're seeing some of these trials stopped, it might be a couple more years down the road that we actually learn about these agents. How could this have an impact on sort of the lives of patients going forward?
There's going to be lots of bad consequences from the pandemic, and one will be different research trials that are stopped, leading to lack of new discoveries, or at least delays of new different drug or device innovations reaching patients. For sure, there's no way the pandemic will speed up that process. It could only hurt. Now, to put at least a little bit of optimism into this conversation, it's also possible that we'll learn things from the pandemic that we can then apply afterwards to perhaps streamline cardiovascular trials. I'll give you a couple of practical examples. You know, we typically adjudicate endpoints in clinical trials and in cardiovascular medicine. And, you know, maybe it's the case that all that adjudication isn't absolutely necessary. It tends to be expensive. Academic centers do tend to like to do it. I've been involved with a lot of adjudication myself. But, you know, maybe investigator-defined endpoints are almost as good, in some cases better. It certainly is cheaper to use investigator-defined endpoints. So I think that's one, you know, area where there will likely be investigation to see whether we can eliminate or decrease the amount of adjudication that goes on in trials. If I had to predict, I think that will happen in the future, not just because of this pandemic, but because of other cost pressures on trials. We can't keep doing them at the price point of a large cardiovascular outcome trial now when it's $500 million. That's just not sustainable if one wants to keep innovating. Other sorts of things that might happen, you know, there's, I mentioned the inpatient visits might not be possible. I'm not sure they're always that necessary in clinical trials. They might help for some patients staying adherent to the study drug or procedure or whatever the intervention is that's the randomized intervention. But on the other hand, a lot of times when there are in-person visits for these clinical trials, you're listening to the heart, the lungs. I'm not sure that that is necessarily always relevant. If you're studying, for example, a lipid-lowering drug, is it really necessary to listen to their lungs in a physical exam? Is that really adding anything other than cost and potentially inconvenience that the patient has to come in? And I think much like we have moved, for the time being at least, and will continue to if reimbursement keeps up with it, to telemedicine for a lot of office visits, I think the same thing could and should apply for clinical trials, where a lot of that can be done with a televisit and the patient doesn't need to be dragged in to the hospital for, you know, a 10-minute research visit where it's things that are unlikely to improve their health and are unlikely to add meaningfully to the clinical trial. So I think we're going to see lots of innovations that are enduring innovations that come as a consequence of COVID-19. But to answer your question, in the short term, I think it's going to delay the innovation pipeline at a minimum because of COVID-related delays in clinical trials.
Okay, and I know I said that that was my last question, but this is actually my last question. Touching on the trials that have began examining COVID-19 related cardiovascular issues in patients, what has it been like for you? Obviously, you're incredibly involved in clinical trials. There's always a lot of data coming out. But once these trials started, people have really started pushing information out at really a breakneck pace that I, as someone who covers medicine, was pretty surprised by, not in a bad way, but researchers and trialists really stepped up to bring forward this information. What has it been like for you to see sort of this shift in the rapid output of information from these trials?
I think like everything COVID related, it's been educational and there'll be enduring lessons. I think there's a lot to learn from what we've seen. So these preprint servers, for example, have become very popular. I'd always been a little skeptical of them, but now I've got a much more open mind. I mean, I see that there can be value in getting something out there and getting essentially an informal peer review. Sometimes the comments aren't particularly insightful, but some of them are really insightful, and ones that might not come up in a peer review, depending on the journal, the article type, there might be, you know, anywhere from 1 to 2 the 6 peer reviewers, plus any number of associate editors and assistant editors and editors in chief that take a look at a particular publication. But of course, if something's on a preprint server, you know, tens or hundreds or thousands or millions of people could potentially, you know, peer review it. And, you know, might that improve the quality of science? Maybe. So, you know, I'm keeping an open mind to all the things that I've seen much more of. You know, there's obviously been some issues with some research that's come out maybe a little too soon and without sufficient vetting. But, you know, that can happen and has happened even pre-pandemic and will continue to happen post-pandemic. I think in general, science is self-correcting. It doesn't always seem that way to the lay public. But in general, what I've seen is, you know, things do get fixed and ultimately studies are done that either corroborate or invalidate prior findings. So overall, I think the scientific machine has been working pretty well, but it's sort of been a stress test on on the whole scientific apparatus and on publication and publication processes. And I think it has uncovered some areas where, you know, we could all collectively improve, both in terms of how we do research, how we report it, how we publish it. But that itself is science, always an attempt to do better and to improve compared with the past. So I think there's a lot collectively we have learned and will continue to learn in terms of this pace of COVID research that's come out, how to integrate it into practice, when to be skeptical, when to embrace new data. So essentially, this isn't dissimilar from the challenges that a practicing physician or an investigator or an editor faces pre-pandemic. It's just that it's been much more compressed and intense and perhaps much more in a public fishbowl. But nevertheless, I think, again, an opportunity for us to learn and improve even hopefully when that post-pandemic day comes.
All right, that was about it on my questions. Thanks for taking time to speak with me about those studies. I appreciate it.
Yes, as always, very nice speaking with you.
That's it for this episode of Practical Cardiology. I'm Patrick Campbell. Thank you for listening.